On Deck Radio, wall-to-wall baseball talk. With Pete Wagner and former Twins Gene Larkin and Al Newman.
The Twins are going to win the World Series. The Twins have won it.
Covering the diamond like the world's biggest rain tarp, Pete Wagner and former Twins Gene Larkin and Al Newman. On Deck Radio with 105 The Ticket.
2-1 to Dozier and a blast to left. Deep and gone into the second deck.
Parra sends one deep in the center field. That is way back. Oh, it's gone! It is off the glove of Robinson and out of the ballpark.
Mechanics as Scooter Gennett turns one around. Back into right it goes, and it is up and out of here. Scooter Gennett goes where the big boys hit him. And that ball's hit deep. Ramirez sends it out of here. A home run for Ramos Ramirez.
Welcome to On Deck Radio. I'm David Helmer. As you can tell by that highlight package, the Twins did not fare too well last night. Your usual host, Pete Wagner, still with us. He's on the line in Fargo. And Pete, I gotta say, my experiences in Fargo have pretty much been every time I'm there, it's 30 below wind chill or something terrible like that. Is it a little better there today?
Well, you know what? It's fantastic. In fact, I was downtown last night carousing here in lovely downtown Fargo, and this town comes to life in the summertime. It's great. I'm at a great American Legion baseball tournament. The Fargo American Legion Post 2 is hosting a tournament from Jack Williams Stadium, and then they have another one going on over in the Moorhead side of things. So it's a terrific weekend for baseball, and I am not freezing, and I'm not flooded. I love it up here.
Well, that's fantastic. And as always, we're joined by former Twin and former singular home run hitter for the Montreal Expos, Al Newman. And I believe you're in Duluth. How's it going, Al? All right, I'm not hearing Al right now. I might have to call him back in just a second. So, Pete, let's just dive right into it. Trevor May only lasts a third of an inning last night. What kind of performance was that? How do you turn that around? What must have felt like an eternity to him, it felt like an eternity to me just watching it. How do you get a young guy like Trevor May back on track and as a productive member of this rotation?
Well, I'll go with an elongated answer on that one for you, David Helmer, while you try to get back in touch with Al Newman. But I think that was one of the most painful, long first innings I've seen of the year. The bigger issue for Trevor May is you've got five pitchers in this rotation, of which a sixth is going to be coming in a couple of weeks here, as Ervin Santana is on his rehab assignment right now with Rochester in the AAA, and he's going to be a great infusion for this ball club. But bigger than that is who is going to be the odd man out. Right now, Tommy Malone, as you and all of our listeners know, I've been a big fan of his ability to really keep games in check, give his club an opportunity to win. He's not walking a lot of guys in his second stint here with the Minnesota Twins. And you know, Trevor May be hearing some footsteps. I don't know if that's what leads to last night, but I think the big thing that was standing out to me was his body language and how he was responding to things. He clearly wears his emotions on his sleeves. And you could tell as the game was progressing, it was becoming a little bit more of an issue for him as far as you're just getting the next out. Could only get one out in that ball game. And then he gave way to Alex Meyer, the big fella who had his major league debut in relief. I think he will stem the tide, stop the bleeding, and was able to come up with an inning, a solid innings in relief for an inning and two-thirds. Then he got kind of pounced around a little bit. They jumped on him. But at least for the Twins, something to build on. Really appreciated the Brian Dunsing effort. He gave them three innings of solid in relief as well. Good to see that Aaron Thompson had a scoreless inning in relief as well. So for Meyer, I think the bigger deal is to shake that off, come back with a quality start, and give his ball club a chance to keep him when they get back into the Ervin Santana decision-making.
And then you mentioned Alex Meyer, and what kind of tough position does that have to be? It's his first real big league experience here in Minnesota. And he comes into that situation where Trevor May lasts a third of an inning, and now there's a little bit of more added pressure because he's already a highly touted pitching prospect for the Minnesota Twins. What kind of tough position is that to be a young guy and come in, all right, I got to try and get things under control in my first outing. How do you shake out the butterflies and just get out there and pitch?
Well, not, that's a good question. Not the most ideal situations, you know, when your debut is, when you've been a starter your entire career, you're used to starting with a fresh slate. And, Alex Meyer comes into a, really tough situation where, you know, I mean, it wasn't raining, it was pouring, and, he didn't have an umbrella at that time. I think he did a good job to keep himself dry, to continue with the metaphor. I think when you walk away, you take, your first major league appearance on the rubber and say, I got guys out, I did my job, and I hung in there and did the things I needed to do. I think the bigger scope was that. You shake off the fact that it was a shorter outing, but I think there'll be another outing or two for him. Well, the one thing, Dave, that was standing out to me is, when was the last time we saw a guy pop in the radar, got 96, 95, 97 like that? Incredible.
Since Jesse Crane.
Since Jesse Crane, but his fastball didn't feel like the one we were watching last night.
No, not quite. And it's going to be interesting to see how arm fatigue used to be a problem for him. It's going to be interesting to see how his progression continues in the bullpen as opposed to being a starter. But I also want to move on to another highly touted prospect, Byron Buxton. We finally saw him come up. Twins fans have been waiting for that moment for such a long time. It seems like a long time. And now he comes up and he sprains his thumb and he's on the DL. Are we concerned about his injury issues? Last year, there was kind of a freak thing when he dove and Mike Kwasnicka dove, and they ran into each other, but he had a thumb problem last year. He had a wrist problem. Are we concerned about his injury proneness at this point in his career?
Well, I don't know if we should be majorly, you know, to the sound of the alarms concerned, but it obviously has to be on the radar. I mean, the first thing that comes up when you see that, not only is this like a thumb wrist issue that he's working his way through, this is looking like it's what we're in 4 to 6 weeks. I mean, this is, you know, when you get into, yeah, I think of Joey Brennigan, the third baseman with the Gophers, who's no longer playing, had himself a couple of surgeries on a wrist injury that he had. I don't know how it really came about, whether it was a sprain or whatever the factor was that's attributing Buxton to his injury. But the bottom line was, once you start injuring wrists and starting, you know, getting into the surgical part of things, your career becomes a lot more difficult because you depend on your wrist so much in hitting. You put the concussion last year and the other things that the other injuries that have come into play for Buxton. That's no question. Then my concern is the durability. But from my perspective, it's been, can he play an entire season, even at the double A level, injury free? He gets up to the Twins and boom, you're injured. And I don't think that's going to help yourself any. Obviously you're going to have to give way. Aaron Hicks is rehabbing and he'll be back in the lineup. So I think there's bigger issues to that.
And to replace Buxton in the lineup, they recalled Danny Santana. As we know, he's back at shortstop this year, and he really struggled at the plate. You saw him swinging at a lot of bad pitches and taking good pitches. And did they bring him back up because of his outfield experience? Because typically you don't really see an outfielder get replaced by an infielder. Did the Twins decide, we can use Santana, we can leave Nunez at short, and Santana can shore up center field for us in the absence of Hicks and Buxton?
Dave, count me as one guy that is really excited about the fact that Danny Santana can get back to center field where he was a 300 hitter last year in the big leagues. I think that without question, last year did not impact his hitting, his swing, and his numbers. So let's stand with that for now. And, you know, I didn't think he hurt them defensively, last year as well. So, Danny Santana definitely back in the lineup is a good thing, for sure. And I think as an outfielder, I think it's simple to say, you know, he was thinking less and had less responsibility as a center fielder last year because he was learning a position he was pretty foreign to. However, I do think it took the responsibility of being the guy at shortstop away from him last year. And, why not? It gets him some at-bats. Maybe he's found his swing a little bit down in Rochester. I like to call up. Interestingly enough, not called up was Oswaldo Arcia, clearly, appearing to be buried down in that AAA, realm, or at least, you know, at least what their priorities are for who they're going to call up.
Well, also, Oswaldo Arcia, his defense is really lacking. He's not really the go-getter, fast-moving type that a Danny Santana can be if we use him in the outfield. Shane Robinson, Sugar Shane, he's pretty quick out there, and to replace guys like Buxton and Hicks, they cover so much ground out there. At what point do you decide to bring Arcia up for his lack of defense but his big swinging bat?
Well, I mean, I think if the Twins are struggling in scoring runs, that would be something you would consider for Oswaldo Arcia. But I think defensively, you need to catch the ball before he can hit the ball. And I think it's only maybe average to below average at best for Oswaldo Arcia defensively. He does have the big bat. He has the capability of picking up some runs for you. He's a very competitive guy, too, no question. But I think this team is more athletic. And I appreciate your comment on Josh Robinson. I mean, that guy, to me, he can play all three outfield positions, and he's a pro, and he's been swinging quite the bat for the Twins this year so far.
And he got an assist last night, helping that leadoff home run for the Brewers up over the wall. So that was pretty interesting. I don't think he would like to do that one again. And then also,
he didn't go Jose Canseco off the head, though.
No, I mean, not quite.
He went off the glove, right?
Yeah. It hit the leather, so we'll count it as somewhat of a win if you ever can count that as a win. But also, you mentioned you got to catch the ball before you can hit the ball. What about that applies to Danny Santana? He struggled so bad, like at the beginning of the season at the shortstop position. Were those struggles in the field, him not being able to catch the ball, so to speak, were they hurting him at the plate when it was time to get it done with the stick?
Well, you know, what we've seen with this team, it's been, I don't want to say by committee, but they've collectively done a really nice job picking each other up along the way. Scoring runs last year has never been a problem. And scoring runs this year, I don't know, you tell me, and from what I'm seeing, it seems like it's a little more spotty, Dave. I mean, it's kind of, they'll have runs of 5-6 games in that baseball where, boy, everything's coming together, and then it gets a little bit quiet, but they get a nice pitching performance. Would you agree that it's been a little hit and miss across the board, regardless of who it is?
Well, that, and especially recently, you've seen them go on even those wins and loss streaks where it comes together for Trevor Plouffe and a couple other guys. Torrey Hunter hits well for a week or so. Then it just kind of disappears. But that's going to do it for segment one. We're going to try to get Al Newman on the line. Don't know what's going on with that right now. But we're going to bump five questions up in the rotation, so to speak. And we're going to come back with that and hopefully Al Newman. This is On Deck Radio on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. I'm driving by. Back to On Deck Radio. I'm David Helmer. We got Pete Wagner on the phone in Fargo, and we were able to get in touch with Al Newman. And Pete, we're talking off air. You have a question for Al. Hit him with it.
Well, one of the things that we were talking about in our first segment was the Trevor May and really getting lit up like the proverbial Christmas tree in the first inning. The big thing that stood out to me was his body language and how he was showing his emotions. He's a very emotional player and wears it on his sleeve. So the question now is, how much do you talk to your players? And as a big leaguer, if a pitcher shows that he's visibly upset, how much does that play into giving the other team an advantage? I mean, do you need to keep that in check? And then the second part is, could it be the pressure knowing that Irvin Santana is coming back as well?
Most definitely, and you know, for young pitchers, you know, when you show a lot of personality on the mound, emotion on the mound, not only are you obviously showing the umpire you're frustrated with possibly a close pitch that he did not call a strike, you're also displaying to the hitters that you do not have command of your off-speed stuff or of your fastball, and it forces them to say, well, hey, if he's worried about it and he's concerned, the only pitch he can throw is the one right down the middle, which was quite evident of the one-third of an inning I believe he threw in that game against Milwaukee. Young players, young pitchers, you've got to get that under control. It's as important as your physical ability, because if your emotions are in the way, your instinct, or maybe a tick off, your release point, a tick off, and, you know, you start to get tight. Your muscles aren't free and easy. So a lot of things come into play with players. They don't realize it. You know, they just try to figure out what's going wrong, and then panic sets in. And I'll be honest with you, you know, situations like this, just say, for example, if the Twins get into the playoffs when it's a pressurized situation, these things come back to haunt you. And a lot of times players don't make playoff rosters because they can't handle pressure situations.
All right, Al, we talked about it in the first segment a little bit. I'd like to get your outlook on it. Alex Meyer is a guy that he really struggled once he hit about 100 innings in the minor leagues. He suffered from arm fatigue. You saw his velocity dip down a little bit, and he's supposed to be this power pitcher. And then they move him to the bullpen. He goes for a .53 ERA, strikes out 20, throws 17 innings, and he only walked six, which is, you know, it's not great, but it's pretty good for him. Do you think he's found a home as a productive member of the Twins bullpen as opposed to being a starter?
Well, you know, a lot of times, guys, just from my own experience, guys that have power arms don't have quite the stamina, so they tend to try to pace themselves as starters. Matter of fact, I'm not comparing my player in the Northwest League to a major league player, but I had a talk with him because when I brought him out of the bullpen, man, he was free and easy, and you could see the determination on his face. His fastball was 3 miles an hour higher. His breaking ball was a lot more crisp because he knew he was only going to go one or two innings. I think Mr. Myers might be one of those guys in the sense that you don't think much when you come out of the bullpen. All you know is power stuff and power mentality. You're in charge. So I think this may be a role for him. And I really think the Twins are onto something when they put him into the bullpen because of the arm fatigue and things of that nature. Again, people would say, well, if you put him in the bullpen, he's going to pitch maybe 3-4 times a week. Yes, but those are short bursts of energy and a limited amount of pitches. Those guys normally are on that 15-20 pitch number when they come out of that bullpen before the next guy arrives to the mound.
All right, Pete, I was watching the NBA draft the other night. It actually got me thinking. They mentioned Pat Connaughton, guy out of Notre Dame, now heading to the NBA. He actually had offers from the Baltimore Orioles, who originally drafted him a few years ago, to not play basketball, come and throw his fastball that reportedly clocks in around 95, 96 miles an hour. Got me thinking about two-sport athletes like Bo Jackson, Deion Sanders, Brian Jordan did it for a little bit. Do you think we will ever see a two-sport athlete in today's sports ever again?
I wish. I think that would be the easy answer. Boy, that would be a great thing. And, you know, along with the two-sport athletes, and Al, you know how hard it is to be a one-sport athlete at a professional level. You
sure.
have to really be dedicated to what you do to get it done. And I don't think it'll happen, personally. I think that's a thing of the past. But Deion Sanders, let's go there for a minute. Bo Jackson will leave aside. Didn't you think, Al, that it kind of became a circus with Deion back and forth from New York to Atlanta and all that?
Well, I think with Deion being prime time, he escalated that a little more than Bo Jackson. He loved the limelight, as we can still tell now as an analyst on the NFL channel. He's good at what he does. He was a good player. On the football field, he was a great player. As a baseball player, he was a good player. He was an extra outfielder, a guy that wouldn't hurt you if you put him out there defensively, but a little lacking on offense. But, again, to your question, I think he did promote it, but I also think that those days may be over just because kids specialize a little more now picking one sport. But I do have a couple of Notre Dame guys on my team who says that this guy did have a pretty good fastball, and he was a good player.
Well, how about a guy maybe transitioning instead of playing two sports at once? You see a lot of guys are retiring earlier and earlier in the NFL because they're worried about concussion issues and things like that. Do you think we might see somebody transition from possibly football to baseball? That seems to be the biggest correlation if somebody's going to play two sports at all.
Well, he must be a pretty good town ball player because that'd be the only place that he would get his experience as far as keeping his velocity up. I just think the training regimen would be too restrictive to him playing baseball, you know, at the level that he would be necessary for him to have success.
All right, and then this seems like the year of highly touted prospects finally making their MLB debuts. You look at Chris Bryant, Jock Peterson, Carlos Correa, and then you got Byron Buxton locally, and Alex Meyer finally made it up. It seems to be a pretty power-packed rookie class. Do you think this is the class that 5 or 6 years from now will be kind of dominating the sport, and these are the names you're going to be seeing in the All-Star game. Pete.
Well, these are definitely Go ahead, Pete.
Oh, okay. I would agree. I think I know where Al was going with it. This is definitely a high-talented class. I think every class has players, no question. But it's how good are those tools that they possess, and how good are they? I am not really big, as you guys can tell and all of our listeners can. Talk and expectations do nothing for me, because you can be the greatest thing since sliced bread. If you can't stay healthy, or if there are other issues that come along the way, it's awfully tough to keep a guy in the lineup along the way. So before we anoint any class, that's tough to do. Now, with that said, I think this is a very deep group of players. But I look at it more in bunches. I think the past 3 years have been very good.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to go alongside with Pete on that one. I mean, for as good as Mike Trout is, I'm not trying to knock his abilities whatsoever, but when we start talking about elite and complete players, you know, you can tell the game has changed, because, you know, Mr. Trout hits for a high average, he hits home runs, he drives in runs, he scores runs, but he also strikes out quite a bit. So if you put more balls in play, heck, who's telling what numbers he would put up? But, you know, to say that this class, even Mr. Bryant in Chicago, defense is a little bit lacking at this point, but yet he's got the homers and the RBIs. So there are some shortcomings. I think as far as publicity and notoriety, I think the arrival of these players has been greatly anticipated. And in a lot of ways, they have not disappointed. They have been on the highlight reels and all that. Those are the things that seem to preoccupy people now more than anything. So in that respect, I'd say two or three of them have lived up to whatever expectations of the media had put out there. And I'm not blaming the media for the hype, but yet everybody's quick to try to get the story. So therefore, there's always a great deal of publicity when you get a player that's supposed to be a five-tool guy.
All right, moving on to question four. Phil Hughes, we've seen him struggle early this year, and he kind of did the same thing last year. He came on really strong in the back half and was really the ace of the staff, and that's what he was expected to be. That's why we gave him that extra contract, and he just went 8 innings. He allowed 1 run, 6 hits, and he didn't walk anybody like he likes to do. Do you think this is where Phil Hughes turns around his season? Is this the start that he builds off of and proves to people why he received that extra contract, Al?
Well, you know, I think Phil Hughes is a professional pitcher. He's a major league pitcher, obviously, but he's a professional pitcher. And by that, I mean, he knows how to work the count, to his favor. He entices hitters to swing at first pitches, and then he can use that off-speed pitch to put people away. I honestly believe when we talk about the contract that Phil Hughes received, by twin standard, it was an outlandish contract. It was a lot of money. But by the market standards, he falls right there, maybe below the middle of the pack as far as compensation for a so-called number one starter. So we do use that term, the highest paid player, you know, contract with the Twins outside of Nolasco and things of that nature, because we've never spent money like that before in the organization.
Yeah, if I could jump in on that too as well. I think for Phil Hughes, what I'm most encouraged by is, you know, we've talked about this for the first few weeks. You know, he's number one, and his first few starts were against some pretty darn good pitchers who are tough to out-duel, and yet a team that wasn't putting the ball in play as much as they have been. The difference between this year and what he's has or hasn't done in his New York years on his off years was the swoons were much longer and larger for him. This is, again, now I believe he's, 6-6 right now on the season. I think he has proven that he is finding his game and his groove as a pitcher. And this is the days of New York where he'd be 8-16, I think, are a thing of the past, and a great sign for the Twins and a horse for them.
All right, cool. That's going to do it for segment number two. Moving on, if Al can stick around, I'd like to get your thoughts on Pete Rose. The evidence came out that he bet on baseball while he was a player as well. Can you do that?
Yeah, I'll touch that hot topic.
All right, perfect. We're going to come back with that little Pete Rose talk when we return. This is On Deck Radio, Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. Welcome back to On Deck Radio. I'm David Helmer. We got Pete Wagner and Al Newman on the phone. Little Rush and Working Man bringing it back. I'm sure Pete appreciates this.
And Working Man speaks to my soul.
Hey, do me a favor. Could you dust off my seat there? I haven't sat in it in a while.
Yeah, no problem. I'll step over there right now.
You're all right. Thank you. Thank you very much.
There's so much dust in there. I feel like I'm in the scene of the monsters.
It's been fun. It's been a nice summer of baseball. So that's our game, and that's who we're talking about.
Hey, your team is coming along, huh? Five of their last eight. I heard they were 5-6 at one point.
Yeah, we are playing pretty well here the last week to 10 days. I've got a few of my – I got the majority of my players are all here now, and we're starting to blend as a team. And as you just mentioned, we've won 6 out of our last 8 games. We beat Duluth last night, and we're on our way to play St. Cloud this evening.
That's good stuff.
All right, now I'm jumping into it. Pete Rose, with the evidence that he bet on baseball while he was a player – Al, what does this really do to Pete and his Hall chances and just basically the outlook on his career?
Well, I think this is the dagger that finally puts Pete to rest as far as baseball is concerned. You know, Pete said he didn't bet. It was strictly as a coach. And now it's come out that he's actually was betting as a player. And, you know, that just kind of lends to how arrogant Pete was in his acknowledgement when he was facing, you know, the commissioners back in the day. It's unfortunate because, you know, Pete's all-time hit leader. Yes, you think he should be in the Hall of Fame as a player. But, I mean, again, guys, every year in spring training, the Players Association comes around to every ball club and they read the bylaws. The general managers read the bylaws to the players. And number one is betting on baseball. And you can laugh and you don't want to hear it because it's an hour and a half long day of sitting and listening. But it's not like he wasn't told. So therefore for me, and I'm not even judging you, I'm just going by the rules, he should not be in the Hall of Fame. For many years, I always said that Pete belonged in the Hall because his bats were in there, his shoes, his gloves, and all of those things. And supposedly, he hadn't been as a player. But now that this has come out, I've totally changed my mindset. And it just confuses me that Pete can be that arrogant and that self-righteous that it doesn't matter to him. He still thinks that he should be in the Hall of Fame.
Well, agreed, and boy, when you're black and white on the rules, and like you say, you can sit with it and say, oh boy, this is the longest hour and a half of the day or of the spring training or whatever it may be. It's necessary information. In any profession, there are guidelines and rules from which you have to follow. The part that bothers me is the arrogance that seems to have followed him from the day he stepped out of the field, Charlie Hustle. I got to ask you, Al, as a player breaking into the league, he seemed to me as a fan, I don't like him because he came off like a jerk. Was he like that as a player?
Well, you know, I mentioned that, you know, I really liked the Cincinnati Reds back in the day. Matter of fact, my college had uniforms. My junior college, we had Cincinnati uniforms. They used to call me Little Joe, so Morgan was always my favorite player. But Pete Rose was the guy that drew all the attention because of the head first slide. And I broke into the big leagues in 1985 and I believe Pete Rose was with the Phillies in. And, I was pretty much told to leave him alone. He's an arrogant guy. I've never spoken to Pete, never been on the same field on second base when he got there. So never had that opportunity. But I'll be honest with you. I never actually wanted to ever talk to him just because of what people had said about Pete Rose and just watching him and his arrogance, and it just seemed like he walked around with his nose up in the air. So I wish him no ill will, but yet, you know, that arrogance gets people in trouble. And, you know, my only comparison to that, and I mentioned it off air, was Roger Clemens and his personal trainer. For some reason, that personal trainer kept stuff that he used to you know, inject Roger with steroids or what have you. And Roger never had an idea that this guy, he was treating that guy so bad that his own personal trainer that he took to Toronto and brought to Yankee Stadium with him eventually turned on him.
Well, how about millennials when they take over the Veterans Committee, the Veterans Selection Committee, years down the road? You could see a lot of these steroid users eventually getting into the Hall of Fame, and would Pete be a part of that?
I don't think so. I don't think Pete would be a part of it simply because of the betting issue. Steroids, I'm not saying there's any less than betting, but, you know, betting, you know that's wrong. Steroids, you know, were wrong, but it wasn't in the books for the baseball. You know, I'm not saying it was legal. It was illegal in the United States, and it was not in the rules for baseball that you couldn't use them, you know? So it's kind of a fine line. It doesn't make sense. You're not trying to justify anything, but I don't think Pete will ever get in, and the millennials, I think, will totally keep him out.
Well, it's a fine line, too. I mean, I'd like to think the millennials have some semblance of a concept there where there's a differential between right and wrong. And I know we're hearing a lot from the old school writers and the people like that have been tossing that around, that, you know, maybe, you know, even the political rhetoric, things that are on agendas now that we talk about today that we never even dreamt of talked about, you know, 35, 40 years ago. You know, it has changed to a quote, more tolerant society, which is fine. But I think when you get into a Hall of Fame discussion, you have standards from which a player enters in. I don't think it's going to be a generational thing. I think no one's in the Sugar Joe Jackson here, either, are they?
That's pretty much the forbidden fruit.
Yep, exactly. I think
it's. Oh, most definitely.
Absolutely.
I heard one person say it should be legal to bet on your own team, and all players should bet on their own team because that's going to make you try a lot harder when you have money on the line. What would you think of something like that? You're not fixing games. You're giving yourself extra motivation.
Yeah, I believe in the tooth fairy, too. You know, that's the total buffoonery to think that if you bet on your team, you're going to try harder. I think it would be a total disruption in the clubhouse. Simply because now you're going to be mad at the manager for what type of players he's putting out on the field. You know, are you playing day games after night games? Guys, would you be expecting guys on a big game? You know, it just brings so many things into play that, I don't think that should even be given a thought. I like the rule the way it is. Play the game fairly. Keep the gamblers out of the clubhouse. You know, that type of thing does no good for the game.
Well, it's that old saying, more money than you know what to do with. Nowadays, athletes make so much, it just seems that they gravitate that way and they want to gamble on anything that they can find. Look at somebody like Michael Jordan, who has this vast, vast wealth, and he'll bet on pretty much anything.
Yeah, it's him and Mayweather are big-time gamblers. But I tell you what, how about gambling on my foundation? They can donate to my foundation, and we'll try to do the best we can to put that money to use for kids to not only go to Cooperstown, but provide gloves and shoes and things. I'm sure they can find a lot of other things, another ways to give away their money if they're so willing to do it.
Now, what is your foundation, and how does one get to it?
You just go to the AlNewmanFoundation.org. Speaking of that, this Sunday we're having a bowling event in Alexandria, Minnesota, at the Garden Center Lanes, and we're just trying to help kids, you know, be able to buy a membership to batting cages and things like that. I'm rather small, but we do try to do the best we can to help young boys and girls be athletic and be more active and get outdoors when they're able to go outdoors because of the weather. So in the wintertime, I do have camps indoors. But I just want kids to be able to play the sport and learn to love sports. I think it teaches you about life lessons, the winning, the losing. Right now we're telling kids nobody's a loser. Well, that's not true. In the real world, when you apply for a job, if you don't get the job, that means you didn't get the job. That means you lost. So I think sports shows you a lot about how to blend with teammates, how to share share the notoriety. So I don't want to get on a pedestal and all that thing, but I do try to help kids in sports buy shoes when they can't afford it, help their parents pay the membership. So there's a lot of things that we could use. If they want to gamble with that money, please gamble on the young kids by donating it to your best foundation that you think can do the job for you.
Yeah, you can definitely, when you make that much money, put it to better use. There are all kinds of different highways you can take in any aspect you want to take it.
You can never lose when you gamble on your foundation. You're always winning, correct?
Yes, sir. You got that right. There's going to be a lot of smiles tomorrow night in Alexandria at the Garden Center Lane.
All right, perfect.
Fire that email address real quick, if you could, one more time. Or that website. What was that website?
I didn't hear you.
What
did you say?
What was the website?
Oh, the website is www.AlNewmanFoundation.org. And you can communicate with us. We're going to probably have a golf tournament up at Rutgers Lodge up in Brainerd later on in September. So please go to the website and look it up. Pete and I will be up there doing a live broadcast, and maybe Dan, you can come. Dan and Dave, you can come.
Perfect. All right, Al, thanks for sticking around.
Thank you. Thanks, buddy, and thanks for giving me an opportunity to talk about the foundation. I appreciate it. You guys have a nice one, and we hope we can beat the St. Cloud Rocks tonight.
All right. Good luck with that. Pete and I are going to be coming back. Hopefully, we can get A.J. Pedersen on the line, former Gopher, former Twin. So hopefully coming back with that. This is On Deck Radio on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. Welcome back to On Deck Radio. I'm David Helmer, and I'm never going to stop believing. We got Pete Wagner in Fargo, and now we are joined by A.J. Pedersen, former Gopher, former Twins prospect, and current coach of Chanhassen, correct?
Yes, Chanhassen.
And you are at Target Field watching a game right now?
I am. The national anthem's actually going in the background right now.
Oh, great. We're interrupting our national anthem. We've got A.J. Pedersen. We've got everybody saying, wow, look at this guy. He's completely disrespectful. So let me let everybody know what's going on with A.J. while the anthem's playing real quick. Obviously, this is Pete Wagner, one of your co-hosts of the program. I'm at Jack Williams Stadium here in Fargo, North Dakota. Great Legion tournament going on here. And A.J., of course, first-year coach for the Chanhassen Storm, and they win the state baseball tournament. Had a great ball club with a ton of depth that executed a terrific season. He, of course, was the former Minnetonka skipper. I believe he played with Excelsior in the Legion side of things, University of Minnesota, then was a Twins draft pick, and then worked his way all the way up to Britain. Comes back to the Twin Cities as coach of the Storm, and the next thing you know, they're winning a state title. A.J., take us through the whirlwind. How did the job come about, and was it something you were looking to do?
You know, I was looking to coach right after I got out of playing. Just so many coaches had a big impact on my life, my career, and things like that. So I was hoping I could, you know, maybe do that for some kids somewhere. I was looking at some college opportunities. And actually, one of my good family friends I ran into, he's actually the head cross-country and track coach at Chanhassen, and he said, you know, this job's available. I didn't really have a full-time job yet, so I jumped at it, interviewed, and was lucky enough to get the opportunity. Really thankful that they gave me the chance as a young guy, not really any coaching experience, to get that job was pretty neat. So pretty fun year, obviously, in the first year, and excited to, you know, try to keep things going in the future.
You said you knew you wanted to get into coaching after your playing career was done. What's been, like, the weirdest part of making that transition from player to coach?
The weirdest part's probably having the least amount of, less amount of control over the game. I really only get to write the lineup, and as you know, in baseball, there's not a whole lot you can do. You're not running a ton of plays, like you might be in football or basketball or things like that. You know, you're really just sitting back and controlling the environment a little bit. Letting go of that control has kind of been the most difficult thing where I was, when I'm playing, I'm out there going, you know, I can make a big play here. I can get a big hit and we can win the game. And as a coach, it's like, you got to kind of trust the guys you put out there to do those things.
you know, AJ, you've had a number of coaches from John Anderson and the crew at the University of Minnesota all the way up through your professional career. Were there certain things that you were able to, glean from them and take and use with a particular style that's fit into this season?
Yeah, definitely. John Anderson at the U of M has been a huge role model for me, one of the best people I've ever met. Really believed in me to do my thing out there, and that he was big into mental training and, you know, pumping his guys up and making sure everybody was feeling real confident to be as good as they could be. So that's one of the biggest things I knew I was going to implement right away was, we do a lot of mental training, belly breathing, exercises and things like that I think will help the kids not only, while they're playing on the field, but, you know, most of these guys are going to be done playing after high school or college. And so, they're going to get into job interviews and they're going to get into, you know, meetings at whatever they're doing next. Stressful situations where, these sorts of skills are going to really help them to be successful, I think. So, they really have helped me. And that's one thing that, 14 at the U of M does is, implements those kinds of techniques and skills that are going to help people way past their baseball career. And so I'm really thankful to have, that I've had him in my life as a coach, as a mentor, and as a friend.
Interesting point there. Obviously, there's decisions for some players, for elite ones, which is, you know, do I stay or do I go? Do I get into the big leagues? You know, or do I sign with the organization? What do I do? And, there's pros and cons to each, but it sounds to me like you were set up to succeed at the next steps in life, which would be in the work world as well. Would you recommend one or the other for players that are in that position? Take a Jake Irvin, for instance, from Bloomington Jefferson.
You mean to, like, sign high school or college or whatever early?
Yeah. Would you sign or would you say, hey, you know, take advantage, go to Oklahoma like he is or wherever it is, and that's where he's going? What kind of advice would you give a guy like that?
I mean, I would honestly tell him it would have to be a lot of money. And I've put numbers out there to my kids, but it's got to be, you know, upwards of $1 million to make it worth it, really, to me, just because that experience that you gain in college, you know, you can't really, I mean, kids are like, well, I think I can go back and do college. But the truth is you can't really go back and do it the same way, you know. And I had such an incredible experience at the U of M that I would never have traded that to play for 4 more years in professional baseball. There's no question.
I think that's an important note for everybody to hear. Now, if you're a first or second round pick and you're talking about those 7-digit numbers, what are you doing? Get in there. But if you're a 30th round pick, chances are if you are serious about baseball, you can take the grind of the collegiate level. You then now have the ability to say, I'm going to get drafted a little bit higher like some of these college pitchers do, and then
yep.
You can start making that money back.
Exactly, and I actually, you and Connor that again in college. I actually left with 1 year of eligibility remaining, as did a number of my friends that were there. But I had actually already graduated from college, so it was a little bit different situation where I got a tiny amount of money, but it was more than I would have gotten the next year, and it was a better opportunity to go when I was a year younger. So that's why I made that choice. As like I was a redshirt junior, so a 4th year junior.
We're talking to A.J. Pettersson, former Gopher, former Twins prospect, current high school baseball coach at Chanhassen. And sticking with the coaching, what kind of aspirations do you have as far as being a baseball coach? Do you want to move up, go to the minor leagues, work your way to the big leagues, or do you just kind of want to stay a little bit more stationary, not have to travel across the country?
Yeah, I've gotten that question a lot now. People are like, oh, what's next? You know, and I'm like, you know, I'm really enjoying my job selling houses, which is what I do full-time. And I didn't know how that would be, but I really, really liked it. I'm working with the great people. So this isn't such a bad deal where I get the opportunity to coach and I get to have a full-time job and a family. And like you said, I don't have to travel around, which is what me and my wife have been doing for the past 2 or 3 years. So as for now, I mean, we're really enjoying what we're doing, where we're at. And I love Chanhassen, the people, the community. Baseball is really important out there. Kids work really hard. And, you know, we could have a really successful program for many years, I think. So,
AJ, what were some of the benefits from your team? What were the strengths you had on that Storm team this year in your depth?
I mean, we had a lot of senior kids and a ton of offense. You know, we had seven, maybe eight guys going to play college baseball next year that are seniors. and a couple of them are D1 guys, a couple of them are D2 guys, a lot of scholarships. Either way, just a ton of offense, and we just shot for a lot of runs. We were shooting for doubles. We never really sack bunted, gave up outs. We played for big innings a lot. The defense ended up being, you know, as expected, and the pitching actually, a couple of senior kids really stepped up towards the end. We only gave up, I think, 2 runs in the state tournament in like 27 innings or something. So, you know, that was just a testament to how hard those guys worked. And, you know, pretty neat to have one of our senior kids out there at the end to finish it off. He was actually in on the interview process while I was getting the job. So it was pretty fun to have him out there to throw a shutout in the championship.
Pretty helpful for sure. I'm sure I have time for a couple more questions. And I want to ask you one on the championship game. I was a little bit surprised because you guys weren't allowing runs in the state tournament. It didn't seem like Wakefield North was committed to wanting to go small ball. They had runners on second with nobody out a couple of times. Didn't advance and pass there. Were you surprised they weren't laying down bunts?
You know, a little bit, just because that's kind of been the MO of most teams we've played. We played all season was, you know, bunt and move guys around and, but from my point of view, that wasn't our game all season, so I couldn't ever really blame anybody for, you know, not bunting and not trying to move runners around because it wasn't really the game we played. We would try to score 3 runs when we got a guy in second and no outs. But, yeah, no, you're totally right. I mean, a ton of teams, especially in the state tournament, they try to, in these close games with the big fields, they try to, you know, do their thing and move runners around, so...
All right, less than a minute to go. We're wrapping it up. I want to say thank you to A.J. Patterson for joining the show. High school baseball coach at Chanhassen, former Twins prospect, former Gopher. Thanks a bunch, man.
Yeah, appreciate you guys having me on.
Well, no problem.
For sure. Have a good one, guys.
You too.
All right, bye-bye.
Well, Pete, time flies. As always, it's a pleasure working with you, and have fun out there in Fargo.
We'll be in studio next week. Don't stop believing, baby. Twins are still in the wild card hunt. Look out.
And Geno's back.
Oh, and double look out.
Absolutely. That's going to do it for the On Deck Radio program. Thanks to Al. Thanks to Pete. Thanks to A.J. Patterson. I'm David Helmer. This is On Deck Radio, Sports Radio 105, The Ticket.